Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites. Another opening
of another show. Well, it was once a four-act opera called Carmen. Then it became a hybrid called Carmen Jones when it went to Broadway in the 40s, with the original music by Georges Bizet, combined with lyrics by Oscar Hammerstein. Then it became a movie starring Dorothy Dandridge at a time the issue of civil rights was engulfing the country. James Baldwin and others saw unintentional racism in the film and put an end to poor Carmen. Well, until now. A pared-down production at the Classic Stage Company on East 13th Street, simply called Carmen Jones, has been a bona fide success, to the point where a Broadway transfer is being discussed. And wouldn't that be full circle? The man behind this is John Doyle, the director who worked similar magic on Sweeney Todd, and most notably and similarly to this one, The Color Purple. Doyle, who is now, in fact, the artistic director at Classic Stage, somehow manages to get under the bloat and find the heartbeat of the show. His Carmen Jones is performed in the round by 10 actor-singers and a six-piece band atop a balcony. There is not a prop to be found on stage. Story-wise, we are in some kind of munitions plant during World War II, where a sexy vixen of a worker, that being Carmen, meets and nabs a GI named Joe. He gets her out of trouble and himself more deeply into it. The action then moves later to Chicago, where Carmen has hooked a boxer named Husky Miller, and, well, all lust and danger break out. You either go with all this or you don't. Well, it's hard not to in this production, since the music, which will be familiar even to non-opera fans, I think, sweeps you away, and the performers bring down the house with virtually every number. Now, of course, any show about Carmen Jones has to have a Carmen who you believe when she sings, "When I love you, that's the end of you." Well, this show has an Anika Noni Rose. She apparently has always dreamed of this role, and now she embodies it beautifully. Dressed in clinging red costumes, she oozes sex appeal and legitimate longing for something better. I first saw Rose in Caroline or Change on Broadway, for which she won a Tony. I later saw her in the film Dreamgirls, so I knew she could sing. But then over the years, she appeared in TV series like The Good Wife and Broadway shows, including Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and A Raisin in the Sun. So with this production, I was reminded of the quality of her singing voice, and this is not easy musical material to conquer. By no means is Rose alone up there. Clifton Duncan, as her Joe, is spectacularly effective, as are Swabber, Joy Ross, Lindsay Roberts, and the rest of the small but effective cast. The show is up for a few more weeks in this intimate setting. Now, when I think back on my night with Carmen Jones, I also think of my night with Harry Belafonte. Okay, that's a bit of an exaggeration. The now 90-year-old Belafonte was just about the last to enter the theater that night, helped along on a walker and his still handsome face somewhat hidden under a baseball cap. But we were all aware that a legend had arrived, one of my own personal heroes, I might add. I managed to grab a moment with him outside after the show. He was kind enough to pose with fans. Then I went home and I checked my memory, or Google, of course. Was Belafonte possibly in the film version of Carmen Jones? Well, yes, he was, portraying Joe. So talk about a full circle. Anyway, it was thrilling to watch him watching it. So Carmen Jones has been downsized to a one act, and the other theater I attended this past week is a series of actual one acts at 59 East 59 Theaters. The venue has been presenting two series of what it calls short plays for 12 seasons now. Theoretically, just about anything can be termed a one act now, including many a play that was originally written as two, but whose creative teams worry audiences might flee at intermission. So is the hour 40 or even hour 50 minute remainder really a true one act? Well, no matter. The three in Series B at 59 East 59 were written as essentially half-hour pieces, true blue shorties. Though I must say, these feel like 30-minute plays that are 20 minutes too long. Not the best batch this year, agreed the New Yorker critic as we walked out with a lot of exhausted patrons. The first one reminds me of a line uttered by the late and great comedy writer Larry Gelbart when he was asked what he would want on his gravestone. He said, "Finally, a plot." Well, that happens to be the title of the first of these one-acts called The Plot. It is written by Claire Zadel and features two very good actors portraying a rather predictable brother and sister. He's the slacker. She's the time-is-money alpha female. They meet at a cemetery where their mother seems to want them to check out her proposed place of demise. It's like she picks out a parking place before buying a car, notes one character. It's not a painful half hour, which is more than I can say for the second one, called Ibis, I-B-I-S. Remind me to look up what that means. The playwright is Eric Lane. This one has to do with a son whose father deserted his family. The older man has now apparently won a lottery. There is also a female detective named Sam Spade, who the young man hires, so they spend most of their time discussing old movies like Double Indemnity and Lady in the Lake. The scenes are, frankly, interminable and largely banal. We all need something to get through the night is about as significant as things get here. The final one act is called Sparring Partner. Now, this one has the most famous name attached to it, playwright and screenwriter Neil LaBute. This is a two-character slog, also including lots of movie titles, the male and female, who seem to be close to starting an extramarital affair, play a guessing game that is about as fun as watching someone's travel slides. Every time LaBute can't think of anything interesting to say, which is pretty much all the time, he throws in some four-letter words. Not exactly music to the ears of the good and loyal and, shall we say, slightly older 59 East patrons. On a positive note, the actors all work hard, and I wish them well with better, if not necessarily longer, material. I have written a couple one-acts myself, one for a 30-minute festival, one for a 10-minute one, and they are challenging. I so appreciate that. You have little time to introduce audiences to the people and the story, and it has to be a compelling moment in those characters' lives, so to speak. No easy task, but I must say I've seen a lot of much longer shows lately, Jill, that I wish had been trimmed down to their most dramatic bones.
Yes, but let's not confuse editing, and which is an ability, or curating, another ability, with the structure, the actual structure of a one act.
That's
and
right.
Constant refrain, is that if you look at things from where they are now, you lose a lot of the context and the reason that it existed. And so when you take something like Carmen Jones, which has had myriad incarnations.
Yes, it has.
And can actually synthesize it to something miraculous. That is true minimalism.
It is. And you wonder, does that mean the other three quarters of it wasn't up to par? Not necessarily, or that certain ones work at certain times. I recall that when I first moved to New York, I remember seeing Peter Brook's production of Carmen at Lincoln Center. And that's the first time I'd even possibly gone to an opera, by the way. But I heard that it was 90 minutes. And I thought, well, I'd like to try something for 90 minutes. It was so pared down. It was that's what people talked about. It was done on I still remember there was sand on the set. It was a very interesting production. But I don't know, what does that mean? That the other three acts aren't?
No, not at all. It's just that in that format, because that's the thing with, you can transpose this, it's a much longer dialogue about minimalism itself. And it's like, okay, a Robert Ryman painting is, you know, or a house that is designed in minimalist style. All right. You know, is there a comfy chair? So that's a different, I mean, it's a different and much longer philosophy, but being able to distill something.
That's right. That's the right word. And John Doyle, of course, when he did with Sweeney Todd and Color Purple, he certainly did not take out any of that. All he did on those was just take out all the
extraneous.
The stuff. He took off all the stuff on stage, all the things that distracted you from what was really very beautiful and interesting music and great characters. It's very tricky. One accent makes you appreciate someone like David Ives, who's sort of a genius at writing memorable little one acts. They're very tricky. I remember when I asked somebody who does one acts, and I said, you know, I'm thinking of writing one. I don't even know how to go about it. What? And he pointed out an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. He said, did you see that episode? I said, yes, I did. He said, remember the one scene inside where Larry's on the phone with his wife, and they're talking about being afraid of being on a flight that she was about to take? And he said, that would be the one act within that 30-minute episode. And it got, you know, it was an interesting way of thinking, you know, pulling out a key, like you say, distilling, you know, a key moment. And that's maybe the one act. The ones that I saw this last weekend were not. It's like they hadn't found that scene, you know, that moment. They were looking, and we had to look along with them, and it makes for a long 30 minutes.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.